So thanks everybody for coming in the morning. David asked me to talk a bit about Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman equations and its applications in some of these problems in control of quantum mechanical systems. So I thought I'll just try to. There has been some discussion on numerical optimization algorithms, and I thought I'll give some flavor for analytical optimizations, and especially introduce two techniques called a maximum principle and Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman equations or dynamic programming, and just give some examples and show how we have used them. And I think that's I'll partly use the blackboard and then partly the projector. So typical problem is that there is this control system. You have f x u of t, where x is your state, some vector in Rn, and u are a bunch of these parameters, m of them, say living in Rm, and you. Well, first thing is, when t is time, there is time dependence in the dynamics. But I mean, if you just put t as another state variable that flows like t dot equal to 1, then I can just take this off and put that in my state. And so I have a system like this. And now there is a cost function j, which is phi of x of f. So I steer my system, and I steer it to a point which is say x of f, so that's my terminal point, and that's the cost I incur, and that's so-called a terminal cost, and then there is this cost that you incur along the way, which is so-called the running cost. So you have this system, and you want to steer this, choose a u where u are set of parameters, and we can actually talk about when these are constrained to lie in a certain set omega belonging to say Rm, and then the goal is that you want to actually minimize this cost function, and so you would want to design u and the trajectories of this system so that a cost functional like this is minimized. So we would like to actually take first is variation of this j with respect to if you change u. Now if you change u, so you have actually you design a control t and u of t, and that generates. So I'm just this is just a cartoon depiction. I mean there are m parameters, so it'll be a trajectory in Rm, and that generates some trajectory x of t. So again, it's a depiction, and now you would like to actually say that if I chose u of t, this is the x of t I generate, and once you have u of t and x of t, there is a cost that you are paying, and then there is some terminal cost wherever your system finally ends up in. And now you actually want to change u. When you change u, your x changes, and as a result, your j, which depends both on u and x, it changes, and your final point changes. And so first thing is one can actually take this and add zero to this, so you have LXU, and then you introduce Lagrange multipliers here, and you add zero to your system. So this is the system must, this is the trajectory of the system. So this is, I'm adding zero to this integral, and I'll tell you in a second why. And I think this is pretty standard, but I just want to take this as a starting point as I launch into what I want to do further on. So then actually here one can just simply take this thing and u plus lambda transpose f of x u, and now here I can actually just do integration by parts, and once I do integration by parts here, I get minus lambda transpose at this terminal time t x of capital T, and I add when I take this lambda transpose x dot, I add inside to this integral here minus lambda transpose dot times x. So this times dt. So this thing comes out. So I took this lambda transpose x dot and I just did integration by parts to get a lambda transpose dot x in here, and then lambda transpose at the final time, this thing plus of course lambda prime at the initial time and x of 0. So there is a reason for writing things like that, and that will be you'll see in a second. Now the thing is, you take this variation of j, then once you take this variation of j, a small change in j, when you change your control u slightly, so you perturb your control u, and that leads to perturbation in this trajectory x. And so if I look at what delta j is, well, that is your final cost, which depends on f. So this is del phi del x evaluated at this final point x of f times how does this final point change delta x of f. And then if I go and look inside this integral here, which is 0 to t, this thing should be 0 to t, then your L changes, and it changes because your trajectory changes at time t. So that is del x delta x of t, and also because your u changes. So this is del l del u and delta u of t. And then if you look at here, I have plus lambda transpose, and then I can take this variation. So f delta f delta x delta x of t plus delta f delta u of t here. And if I now look at what's outside the integral, so that is dt. And then if I look at what's outside this integral, then x0 is the place where you started the system from. So that when you take the variation of that, we are not changing the starting initial point. So that thing variation is 0. So the only thing that comes around from here is minus lambda prime t, and then you have delta x at this terminal time. The delta x at this terminal time, which I am also writing as delta x of f, so I'll just write. So now we would like to, so you know, if u changes, then delta x changes, and the cost changes because of both u and delta x. But you can now, you have this additional parameter lambda standing out there that one can actually choose as one wants, and one would like to choose it in such a way that you only get variations due to u, and one can do that. So if I can just
is there one term missing now in that variation of the underneath the integral minus lambda transpose times x?
Minus lambda transpose dot x, and actually I need this, so thanks for pointing this out. And then you have lambda dot transpose, and then you have here delta x of t.
This
comes with a plus sign, because when I do integration with parts here, then this thing lambda, this thing gives me a plus sign here. Uh, So now this delta j, and then we have del phi del x evaluated at x of f, and then I have this minus lambda prime at capital T, then this thing times delta x f. So this is how your final point changes when you make a small perturbation. And then once one can package things inside this integral, and one gets that you have del L del X plus lambda transpose del F del X here, and this thing here is delta X. And then if one looks at the other term, this is del L del U plus lambda transpose del F del U, and then this thing gives you delta U of T here. And you have this term here, which is minus lambda dot transpose and times delta x of t. Now I have this parameter lambda which is free, so I choose lambda of t, which is now lambda is a vector of the same dimension as the state of the system, the also called co-state vector or the momentum vector. That lambda of t is then chosen such that this thing here, so del phi over del x, this thing is a row vector, so its entries are del phi del x1, del phi del x2, and so on, del phi del xn. So that prime here is this column vector. So lambda of t is this quantity here, and if I choose this evaluated at this final point x of f, then I get rid of this term here, so that goes away. And then if I choose here lambda dot as equal to lambda dot as equal to del L over del X plus lambda transpose del F over del X. Now this prime here, I should have a positive sign here, positive sign with a negative sign. Then this variation here also goes away. And what one is then simply left with is that your delta of j is equal to this integral, and that is del L del U plus lambda transpose del F del U times delta U of T dt going from 0 to say T. And one can then define of Hamiltonian function H, which is your running cost L of XU plus lambda transpose F of XU. So this thing here, H, is then a function of your state, your co-state lambda, and these control parameters that you have, which are then these U. So then what one gets is that one gets that this variation delta J is equal to, I get 0 to T here, and then this is H, function of X lambda U, and I take the derivative of that with respect to U, and that gives me del H by del U times delta U of T dt. So that is my variation with respect to change in control parameter, and you have that your lambda satisfies this equation. This free parameter that one had is simply minus del H by del X, and lambda is defined at this terminal time lambda of t, and its value is simply then this del phi del x prime evaluated at this final terminal point. So then basically the point is that if I design a control u of t, and I design a control u of t and it generates this trajectory x of t, then I can define this Hamiltonian function here, and what then you see is that along this trajectory, if this trajectory makes this cost j stationary, so if u was actually supposed to be an optimal control law, then if I take variation with respect to u, that is what this variation, if I take variation with respect to u, that's what it comes out. And now if the claim is that u is optimal, then it must be true that at least this first variation here should be zero. Otherwise, I can take this delta u of t to be a some small number minus epsilon and times del h by del u. Del h by del u prime. And this that thing will make this cost here, delta j, negative, where epsilon is a small number. And that way, I can actually reduce my cost from what its current value is by changing my u of t that way. So that gives you a first order necessary conditions for this optimality and of a given control law, and that is that x dot satisfies the original equation, which is f of x u. And another way of writing that is that you take this del h by del lambda prime, and then you have an equation for, and you start with an initial state x of 0, and then you have equation for lambda dot, which is minus del h by del x prime, and you define this at lambda at your, so if you have a trajectory, if you have a control u of t and that generates a trajectory x of t, which steers you from an initial point x of 0 to a terminal point x of f, then I can go and compute my lambda of t at this terminal point, which is del phi over del x evaluated at this terminal point. So x has this equation of motion which is given, and then lambda dot here has also this equation of motion which is this equation here, and lambda of t is defined at this terminal point. And now the goal, the point is that along this trajectory, so I can take x, I can integrate this equation, I can get x of f, I can compute lambda at the terminal time, then I have this equation here, I can integrate it backwards, and I can get an equation for lambda t at all points, and then I can actually evaluate my Hamiltonian function h of u, and h of u, when you evaluate it at this trajectory x of t, lambda of t, and u of t, this thing should be equal to, the first variation should be equal to zero. So those become actually your first order necessary conditions for optimality, and where this leads to a gradient descent algorithm for optimization that has been discussed before, is that one actually doesn't have to begin with an optimal control u of t, or a control that actually even satisfies these first order necessary conditions. So one chooses a u of t, one integrates this first equation, one generates a trajectory one goes and computes lambda of t at this terminal point and uses this equation to get then x of t, u of t, and lambda of t for all times. And then from this, one actually goes and computes this h of u, the partial of h with respect to u. And if it's non-zero, then this variation here, delta j, is telling us that your cost u of t has to be modified as u of t minus epsilon this parameter del h by del u. So del h by del u evaluated along this trajectory x of t lambda of t u of t. So that is a recipe then to actually start with a guess at a control and then just flow along and get an optimal cost, go in the direction of improving the cost. What I want to actually, so these are first order necessary conditions. Actually, a stronger statement is true that I mainly want to talk about, and that is that, so given this control system x dot equal to fxu, one can define in a canonical way this Hamiltonian of this system, and this has the state and the co-state, and these are these parameters in the system u. And along the system trajectories, one then has a mechanical system here. This is the equations of how a mechanical system will evolve with position and momentum. And along the system trajectories, the variation of h with respect to u is equal to zero. In fact, what is true is that along the system trajectories, the optimal control actually...
Before you erase, I'm sorry, and maybe you're going to get to this anyway, and it's not necessary, but for me it would be helpful, because this is the point exactly where in the papers that I read on the Krotov algorithm, they take this expression for the cost function of it, that's the last line, that's still mostly there. It's got the... You erase the phi, the fixed cost, plus the integral from 0 to t is kind of just the missing point. And they take all those terms that are there, and then they group the ones that are outside the integral, the fixed cost, and the terms that came out of the partial integration evaluated at the endpoints. And I believe those are set to some symbol g is the ones I've written. And then the stuff in the integral is some other value r. And in the point, at that point, then they claim that you optimize each of those separately, and then that makes it a global. That makes it a sufficient condition for optimality, and it's better now than this necessary condition for optimality. So,
you know, I should read Krotov more thoroughly before I can actually answer that. So I like to see how they do the Krotov version in this. I haven't delved deeper into that. What I want to actually show is that this system here, and now what the claim is that along this optimal trajectory, your control u star of t. U star of t actually maximizes. So this is if this was a minimization problem, then I can write this as arg min actually u, and then we have h of x of t lambda of t. So your control u star of t actually globally minimizes this Hamiltonian function along this optimal trajectory. So it's not just that the first variation of this with respect to u is equal to zero. You have this Hamiltonian function, and if u star of t is an optimal control, then along the system trajectory, it should actually minimize this in a global sense, that at each point u, I choose a u star of t, which I claim is an optimal control. So then it generates a trajectory which is then x star of t, and then from there I can go and compute backwards, say t lambda star of t, and then I have x star of t and lambda star of t, and u is just a parameter here sitting here. So this is my Hamiltonian, and the claim is that this u star of t actually minimizes this Hamiltonian at each instant of time.
The fact that you're necessary conditions of first order surely means that it's not a minimum, it's a stationary point.
It's a stationary point.
What guarantee have you got that it's a minimum?
But that's the stronger statement I'm trying to make now. So that is, so first variation is only saying that your u is a stationary point. That's, if it wasn't a stationary point, then this an argument shows that I can increase the costs.
We discussed it, and Peter made a point that it's actually a global minimum.
Yes.
Strong point.
Yes, it's a very strong point. That is the maximum principle. I mean, you could put a max here by making the cost negative. So this is the maximum principle. So it is a global minimum, and that is really that along the optimal trajectory, this is the global minimum. And it is not actually difficult to see that, so I like to sketch that, a quick proof for that, and that is, so first thing to note is that if I have x dot equal to f of x u, and then I have a cost j, which is phi of x of f, plus this integral L of x u dt, say from 0 to t, then one thing I can do is that I can take all this running cost and put it as a state variable. So define a new state variable x n dot equal to L of x u, where this x here is x1, x2 up to xn. So you can define this as a state variable. So then what I have is that I am looking at this j, which is phi of x of f plus xn plus 1 at this terminal time t. So everything has been reduced to an final cost. So running costs can be just put into a final cost like that. And then all I have to do is now I take my control t, u of t, and then one generates a trajectory which is x of t. And that is my terminal point. And this is the terminal point of this augmented system here. So this is the terminal point of that in which the cost has been added into, in the running cost has been added into a state variable. So all all the cost j is of the form phi xf. So I run the system for certain time, and then I look at where I reach at the final point, and the cost depends on that. Now, one thing to note is that if my control u of t really minimizes this cost functional, it minimizes, then what I see, all I have done until now is I have taken variations of this control by saying that I choose my u of t slightly, and then my trajectory x of f is also perturbably changed. But I can actually, if my u lies in this set omega, and at this point here, it takes on a certain value here, then I can actually change this u at this point here drastically to some other point. So I can actually explore all of omega, and this change can be made very drastic still, as long as this change is only for a small time, like a needle, like a small perturbation here. Then this effect on this terminal point here, x of f, is still going to be small. So we can still look at how does this x of f change if I perturbatively change this. So if I had this is tau, and here is tau minus d tau, and over this interval tau minus d tau to tau, if I claimed that my original control was u star, which was optimal, and it was generating this trajectory x star of t, u star, this was my x dot, then I take this and change it by a large value. So this, in this small amount of time d tau, how does my what is delta x of tau? Well, delta x of tau is simply the new value that you have ascribed to u, which we call as v, which is some point lying in here, which is f of x star of t v minus f of x star of t u star of t. The point is, earlier you were evolving for this small amount of time under this equation, x dot equal to this, x dot equal to this, and in this small time you would have made an increment f x star u star times delta d tau, but instead of doing that, you chose to evolve like this, so the change is simply this thing times d tau. Okay, so you made a big needle variation at this point here, and that resulted in your change in the terminal, in this value of x of t at this delta x of tau, which is just this quantity here. X doesn't change before that because u is not changed before that. So I am just making this big needle variation here. So if I do this, then this is delta x of tau, and now you know you. So if now from there on I am not changing my controls, but because the initial conditions have been changed at time delta x of tau, this x of f will change due to this change in delta x of tau, and this x, the change can simply be now computed. So we have here. So in general, then, if I have this x dot equal to f of x u, then if I make a small change in u and x, so the new trajectory x plus delta x dot is just f of x plus delta x u plus delta u, and then this delta x dot, if I do this difference, it is del f by del x evaluated at the original trajectory x of t u of t times delta x plus delta f delta u evaluated at trajectory u of t times delta u. So if you had this nominal trajectory u of t and x of t, then if you make a perturbation, then this is a linearized system around this original trajectory. So if I call this here a of t and I call this here b of t, then your delta x is simply a of t times delta x of t plus b of t times delta. So this is if I perturb the system, this is how the system trajectory changes to first order in delta u. Now, the thing is, what I have done is I have only perturbed my system by this needle variation so that this delta x of tau changes. So delta x of tau is given. After that, the control doesn't change. So what is delta x of f? Well, delta x of f is simply an evolution of this differential equation here, a of t is time varying, which is then simply the transition matrix or the Green's function phi evaluated at time capital T starting from time tau times delta x at time tau. So this is phi or delta x of f if I make a small change at delta x of tau. That is simply just an x, this is time varying a of t. So one can then write down a Dyson series for this or a Peano-Baker series, and that's the transition matrix starting from delta x of tau. The claim is that this delta x of f, whatever it is, for every variation, if u star of t was actually an optimal control, then your del phi del x evaluated at this point x of f times this delta x of f, this quantity here, this thing, so this is essentially delta x of f, this is a row vector here, this is a sort of column vector, a row vector, this is the inner product between these things, this is how your final point changes, and this change must be greater than and equal to zero if my original trajectory was minimizing. So if the original trajectory was minimizing, then this product must be equal to zero for all possible delta x of f's. Now delta x of f has this form here, which is del phi by del x, x f here, and this thing is phi of t tau, phi of t tau times delta x of tau. So this thing here should be greater than and equal to zero. So now for these possible delta x of tau. So now we can package things as before. We can define lambda of capital T as this del phi over del x at this terminal time x of f. And what we can define is, let me define lambda of T here as simply del phi over del x, this quantity evaluated at xf, times this phi of t tau, this whole thing prime. So this is a row vector, this is a matrix here, so this whole thing is a row vector and I take prime of that. So then I get that lambda, let me call this as tau. So then I get that lambda of tau here is equal to this quantity here, phi prime t of tau, and times here del phi, del which is just lambda of t. So this equation here is now becomes my equation for lambda of tau, and what is being claimed is that this variation, this thing here, is always greater than and equal to zero. So let's write down this thing here and this quantity lambda of tau, and which is so if we just write that thing, that gives me that lambda prime of tau times, now what is delta x of tau? Delta x of tau is this number here, which is f of x tau of tau v minus f of x star of t u star of t. And this quantity here is always greater than and equal to zero for all values of v, which is that lambda prime of tau times f of x star of t u star of t. This thing is less than and equal to lambda prime of tau times f of x star of tau times.
Somehow I lost you now. With the starting with that lambda prime of tau equation.
This thing here is just this statement that if my control u is optimal, then if I take a variation like this, as I described here, that changes my terminal point x of f, and that change is this, and this thing here must be greater than and equal to zero, because any change that you make should only increase your cost, and because you were optimal, you were sitting at the minimum cost, so this thing should be greater than and equal to zero. So then I am evaluating the various things. I am looking at the way I have made this variation here. My delta x of tau is nothing but just this quantity here. And this quantity here, phi t tau, this whole thing, this part has been defined as lambda of tau. What you will see is that the reason for defining this thing as lambda of tau is that now I can write down an equation for lambda dot, and the equation for lambda dot is equal to, so if you write down lambda dot of tau, then that is minus a prime of tau times lambda of tau. So it just follows from taking this quantity here and differentiating it with respect to the second index. So one can work that out, and that is this thing. So now the thing is, if you look at this expression here, this expression here, this is nothing but the Hamiltonian of the system, h of x lambda u, and that is being defined as lambda prime f of xu. The reason there is no running cost has been put into the terminal cost, so this is just h of x lambda u, and the claim is that your optimal control along the optimal trajectory h of x star lambda star u star really minimizes the Hamiltonian. So you have this thing is less than and equal to h of x star lambda star and arbitrary v. So v now takes values in this whole of omega. And if you look at the equation for lambda, I have said that is the equation for lambda, which can then be just nicely packaged, because if I define this as my Hamiltonian, see what A of tau is. A of t is then just simply del f by del x evaluated along the trajectory x of t u of t. Now if you come here and differentiate this expression with respect to x, then what you get is del h by del x here prime is then is simply then lambda, del h is lambda prime del f by del x. So that is what del h by del x is. But this thing here we just saw is simply my a of t. So the equation for lambda dot then is minus del h by del x prime. Just do this. When you do this, then you get this thing is equal to minus a prime t times lambda. That's the same equation we had. I just wrote down that's the equation for lambda. So this as the Hamiltonian of the system, your lambda satisfies these co-state equations, your system satisfies the system equations, but the key thing is that at each point of your trajectory, the stronger statement that the optimal control u star is a global minimum. It minimizes.
So, issue here, you've already assumed in that equation that you've outlined over there that any variation would only increase your cost function, haven't you?
Well, that is the definition of u star.
Yes, but you already, in effect, assumed that you are sitting in the minimum. And then, of course, it propagates forward to that statement.
Yes.
What if it's a stationary point? In that case, that statement is not strictly true and the reasoning downstream breaks down.
Yes. Okay, but my claim is that if your control is an optimal control, then a necessary condition for that is that this thing should be true.
So yes, if it's a minimum,
if it is an optimal means globally minimum.
But it's my point is, haven't you proven what you have just assumed?
No. So the assumption was that I have a control u of t, which actually minimizes, which is optimal. So it gives you the best the most smallest cost. You cannot do better than that. So that is the assumption. If you are making the claim that your u star of t is minimum, is optimal, then the necessary conditions are that there is a state variable, there is a co-state variable, and you have this canonical way of defining the Hamiltonian, and your optimal control u star must minimize the Hamiltonian at each point of the trajectory.
I can agree to that.
Yes.
My point is slightly subtler. It was that, okay, your first order conditions guarantee you a stationary point, but okay, if you have indeed found the minimum via whatever iteration, then the whole reasoning downstream works well, and yes, it is according to your result. Where is the guarantees at the point that you have in fact arrived at actually is a minimum to start with?
Well, so you know, this
so
is
that your algorithm has converged.
But I am.
I have the same.
Once you're confident of that, you'll be fine. But
No. But
if you start with the assumption that it's a global minimum, then what's the value of proving that it's there? That all this.
You know.
That it's a global minimum.
Well.
All
so
conditions were that it be a global minimum to start with.
No. Somebody hands you a control u of t, and he says that this is the best you can do. and I, and so, so what will you, so how will you go against that person? Well, the first thing you could do is you could take the first variation and check if the first variation is zero. But it might turn out that the first variation is zero. Well, but still, this is a stronger necessary condition. When you take this and check for this, if this condition fails, then you know that you can come back to me and say, look, your control could not have been globally minimum because it failed this condition. Because I am...
One minimum in the system.
What's that?
Does that mean there is just one minimum?
Well, it is the global minimum. It is the, you know, so the function, the thing, I am not saying anything about uniqueness. There might be actually other choices of you which still give you the smallest cost J that you are interested in. But if you are telling me that, look, plug in this control U star in your system and get a cost J, and you are telling me you cannot do better than that, that's your claim, then I'm saying is then that control must satisfy this necessary condition. Because you will give that to me, I'll generate X star, lambda star, U stars, and I'll test for it. And many times what I like to show is this is much stronger and actually gives you very non-smooth controls, which, I mean, we have seen some numerical algorithms here. I just wanted to give a slightly different flavor to the whole problem. But so I have, nothing has really changed. All I have done is to yes.
Let me just make one comment about a mechanical analogy for a second. One of the ways of formulating classical mechanics is that the time integral of the Lagrangian is stationary.
Yes.
And if you try an arbitrary trajectory, and you look at the time integral of the Lagrangian, it won't be stationary. If you form the corresponding Hamiltonian in classical mechanics, it won't be constant in time. But if you find the trajectory where the time integral of the Lagrangian is stationary, then the Hamiltonian, which corresponds to that, becomes constant in time. And so the Hamiltonian here is similar in the sense that the variation with respect to U becomes zero. In general, the variation with respect to U of the Hamiltonian is not zero, but when you find the optimal trajectory, then it is. Now, in classical mechanics, you can have multiple solutions that go from X to X prime in time t. That will be stationary with respect to the time integral of the Lagrangian. And in classical mechanics, you have to, in semi-classical mechanics, you have to add the contributions from all of them. But in principle, they'll have different values of the Hamiltonian. But in optimization theory, you have this kind of, you go through the ones essentially that have different values of the Hamiltonian, and you say, look, what I'm really looking for is the one that has the minimum of all these stationary Hamiltonians. And that's the one that I'm really looking for. So I don't know if that's helpful for people, but for me, it's nice to be able to make cross connections between the different.
Yeah, every time I give you a Hamiltonian, that generates trajectories for state and co-state of a mechanical system. And what this is saying is that there's a canonical way to define an Hamiltonian. So you have x dot equal to fxu, and then there is this canonical way of lambda transpose fxu of defining an Hamiltonian, which is x lambda and has parameters u, and then your system satisfies this equations del h by del lambda prime, and then lambda dot as minus del h by del x prime, with x defined at the initial point and lambda at the terminal point, with this del phi del x at the terminal point. And this this condition being true. So that is the stronger condition, that your Hamiltonian is maximized or minimized globally for all choices of control if your trajectory is really an optimal trajectory. So
it will tell you whether your U is U star, but it does not guarantee that you'll find it to start with.
Well, so yes, but many times this condition will be so restrictive that you will find it. So that's the next point. So yes, we can not always find it. These are just set of necessary conditions, but sometimes they are so restrictive that you get an answer.
And this is the point, by the way, just sort of in a general, like the Davis analogy, in a normal physics education, in your mechanics course, they'll teach you calculus of variations and the Lagrangian, and they'll go through this, and they'll derive the necessary condition, which is what you've got up here, and then so you get the Lagrange equations, and then from that point you just jump into solving them, and confident that you're always finding this optimal solution. But never this more subtle question, how are you guaranteed, even in the physical problem, that it really is the global optimal solution? And part of the jumping over, is your statement that it's so restrictive that in a physical system, you know if you found the optimal solution anyway, so you don't worry about the mathematical issues, typically.
In classical mechanics, if you have a simple kind of exponential potential, you can have a trajectory that starts here and gets to this point in time t. You can have a trajectory that starts but going in the other direction at higher energy that also starts from the same point but gets to point x prime in time t. And those will have different energies, but they both go from x to x prime in time t. So they're both stationary solutions of the time integral of the Lagrangian, of basically the Euler-Lagrange principle. But in classical mechanics, you don't throw out the higher energy solution because that's also a physical solution of Newton's laws. But in optimization, you say, well, if this one is lower cost and this one is higher cost, what I really want is the global lower cost.
So actually, let me actually take an example to actually say that how one gets actually interesting control laws, which can be actually quite non-smooth. So let's actually take this x double dot equal to u. So basically, I have an acceleration that I am controlling, and mod u is less than and equal to 1 here. And you are interested in actually, so if I write down this system, I can define x1 dot equal to x2 and x2 dot equal to u. So then you have x1 double dot equal to u. So that's the system that is given. And if one thinks of x1 as the position and x2 as the velocity,
is it x plus u on the right? It's a Driven oscillation.
Well, this is just position of a particle, and the acceleration is what you are controlling. So the force on the particle is what you are controlling. And the force is bounded like that. And you want to take this system and you want to drive it to starting from any arbitrary point in its phase space. So x1, x2, position velocity down to the origin. And you want to do that in minimum time. So I want to start from an initial point x1 0, x2 0, and I want to drive the system to this origin here in minimum time. And and with this constraint that mod u is less than and equal to 1. So, you know, I can define my time here as the third coordinate, which goes like x3 dot equal to 1. And then one can actually ask for, I have a very canonical way of actually writing down the Hamiltonian of the system, which is h is lambda transpose, this is the state vector, so it is lambda 1 times x2 plus lambda 2 times u plus lambda 3. So that is the Hamiltonian of this system, and if you write down the equations for lambda 1, so we go exactly by, so then one gets that lambda 1 dot is equal to, if you take this variation with respect to x1, so there is no x1, so that is minus del h by del x1, so that thing is 0. Lambda 2 dot here, this thing here is partial with respect to x2, so which is minus lambda 1, and then lambda 3 dot, which is partial with respect to x3, so that is 0. So then one actually gets this equations, and now you see at each point your control u should minimize this Hamiltonian, which means that if lambda 2 is positive, then your control u should be negative and as negative as possible. So your control u should be minus signum of lambda 2. So if lambda 2 is positive, then u takes on a value negative. And if lambda 2 is negative, then u takes on a value positive 1. So just by the form of the Hamiltonian, you know that u has to lie on this plus 1 and minus 1. So it's a bang-bang control. Furthermore, because the Hamiltonian has to be minimized at each time. So, and the second thing is, look at the equations for lambda. Lambda 1 dot is 0. That means that lambda 1 is a constant. So lambda 1 is a constant. And lambda 2 dot evolves like ct plus b. It's an equation of a straight line. So that means that if I look at lambda 2, so this is t and this is lambda 2, it's a straight line, and therefore it as t progresses, lambda 2 can switch sign from being positive to negative only once. It doesn't switch times two times, which basically means that your control u can only take the following four possibilities. If you started with lambda 2 being positive and it remained positive throughout, then u takes on a value negative 1. If it started from negative 1 and stayed, then these are the four possibilities for u. U always remains positive, u equal to plus 1, it always remains negative equal to minus 1, or it switches from plus 1 to minus 1, and then, so the third option, it switches from plus 1 to minus 1, so that's 1, and the fourth option is this. So these are the only four characteristic forms of control if they have to satisfy this. So actually then we can in fact exactly pinpoint what these controls are, and so one can actually go and draw the trajectories of this system. So you have x1 dot equal to x2, and then you have x2 dot equal to u, and if u takes on a value 1, then your x2 of t evolves like t plus some initial constant, and then your x1 of t goes like t squared over 2 plus ct plus d, which can be then packaged into as x2 squared over 2 plus some constant d1. If I look at what these things look like, then these things are just essentially parabolas for different values of d1. When d1 is 0, then x1, this relation gives you a parabola like this. And so these are the values of x1 and x1 of t, and x2 is positive, so you are evolving on these things like this. So if you are actually evolving with x2 equal to plus 1, those are the possible trajectories of the system. And if one is evolving as x2 equal to minus 1, then one can convince yourself that if I just do this integration again, I get x2 squared plus d2, some other constant. And so these things are then parabolas facing like this. And along these parabolas, if you look at this, x2 is dot is negative, so I am flowing downwards. So those are the things. Now you see there's a special arc here. So if I call this here as the origin and this thing here as A, this arc which passes through the origin, and this arc down here, which is the white one, which is flowing up, this is, say, B. Then you see one thing is immediate, that if my control is going to always remain positive, I must be sitting on this yellow arc to go down to the origin. If my control always remains negative, then I must be sitting on this purple arc crossing, going through this origin, which I am writing like this. And now, because I am allowed only one switching, therefore if I am above this arc here, which is AOB, then you see the only way to reach origin, if I am sitting somewhere here, is that first I ride along these purple parabolas. So I come here till I hit this arc, which is OB, and then I switch my control to positive, and I go like this and go to the origin. Because I'm allowed only one switching, that is the only strategy that will get me to the origin if I am sitting above this AOB arc. If I am sitting below this, then what I do is I come to the origin along this blue arc up here. So I first ride along these white arcs, which means I have my control U, which is positive, till it hits this, and then I make my control negative and I come here. So which essentially separates my phase space into two pieces. I have this arc AOB. If I am above this arc, so if your initial velocity x1 0, if your initial position and velocity x2 0, this thing is above this arc AOB, so in this region here 1, then so if this belongs to 1, then you first actually make your controls negative and then switch to positive when you hit this arc. And if one is in this region, then one actually starts by having a positive control first and then switching to negative one once one hits this blue arc up here. So if one is somewhere here, then one rides along this till you hit this arc. So the optimal control is actually, you can see, is very interesting. It is only taking on values plus 1 and minus 1, and there is allowed only one switching, and you exactly, by just these necessary conditions, are able to actually cut down all the possibilities into 4 categories, and then going back, one is able to take this on a plane and actually sketch down the optimal trajectories. So that is actually a classical, that's not my example, that's just from the standard book on maximum principle by Pontragin, but it actually gets you one interested in actually looking at non-smooth control laws that go between plus 1 and minus 1 and have discrete switchings like this, and that is, yes.
Oh, I see, but they reach their origin minimum time?
Well, so it reaches the, or because you write down the necessary conditions for your cost function, and you have this Hamiltonian, and these are the necessary conditions, and they are restricting your controls to these.
Well, it's not guaranteed to be minimum time, is it?
Yeah.
Or is it minimum time?
So what is my cost exactly?
Your cost is just the value of x3. So, you plot this and x3, it will be the minimum x3.
I'm understanding the whole point of your example better, because I remember in Pontryagin, the whole maximum principle in his case was to take the basic, the standard calculus of variations that had the restriction, the smooth variations, and allow these jumps. And so now he's given this example in his book, I guess you're saying, here's a simple example where now we allow these jumps and it gives the optimum.
Yeah.
Whereas the previous, I don't know what to call them, but the previous treatments of this kind of problem restricted to smooth variations wouldn't have been able to prove that this is necessarily the optimal solution in the minimum time.
Well, it is actually giving a stronger set of necessary conditions for, and those are pinning down the controls to non-smooth ones.
Right.
And the reason I am doing all this is because actually pulse sequences that we derive are like this. So, I mean, you actually get non-smooth control laws, and it is exactly by application of. So, I like to actually jump right into that and actually show an exact example where you get such kind of a behavior in the. So you're coming back to your question, Krishna, the final cost x1, x2, x3 is simply equal to x3. At the terminal time. Okay, so coming back to actually, there is another formulation of this, which is if I look at the system again, which is x dot equal to fxu, and you. And we said that we can actually put running costs into a terminal cost. And then I pose my problem that starting from this initial condition x naught, I want to design a trajectory so that I go to a terminal point x of f. And And in the process, I want to minimize phi of x of f. So minimize phi of x of f. Now, where x of f belongs to a certain set, say omega, in this Rn. So one can say that I have this problem of minimizing and going to this terminal point x of f, and starting from this initial point x0, and let's say that I solve this. So the goal is that I start with this x naught. You apply certain control for a certain time. You are allowed to choose. You apply a control for a certain time, and you come to a terminal state x of f, which is constrained to lie in some set omega, and you incur a cost which is phi of x of f. And now, suppose you solve this for all initial values of x naught. So there is a, if I solve this optimal control problem, suppose I this minimum, let me call this as v of x naught. So v of x naught is the best thing you can do if you started at time x naught and you were allowed to apply this control u for certain time. So you steer your system, you go to a point x of f, and you want to minimize this phi of x of f. So I can do this for all initial values of x. So v of x is the best or minimum cost starting from so, you know, this constraint xf lying to a certain set here could simply be this, that certain coordinates of this x of f should have certain specific value, which would basically mean that you have to steer the system to that specific point, and remaining coordinates can be free, and then the cost is some function of this phi of x of f. So I like to solve this problem for all initial values of x, and suppose one solves this and one gets a function v of x. So v of x I am going to call an optimal return function. So one can actually write down an equation for what v of x looks like. So see, if v of x is the cost you will incur if you do everything optimally. So you start from x naught, or say journal x, and you apply a certain control, and then you incur a cost which is phi of x of f. And you want to minimize this, so your controls should be so applied that this cost is minimized. And we say let that minimum value be v of x. Then, if I am at this point here, x, and I apply my controls, then I move to a certain point, I'm calling delta x, which is a function of u. So the way the problem is, so if you started here, say at point x, and then you applied your control for certain time, and then you moved to a certain point which I'm calling as x plus delta x, a choice of different u will take you to a different point. A choice of another u will take you to a different point in the state space. Now, the thing is that suppose I have actually already solved this optimal control problem of steering my system reaching in this set omega and this cost for all of these points. then, and so if I have solved this problem and I know that once I am here, what's the best thing to do from there, then that is the cost I will incur if I do everything best starting from a certain point, x plus delta xu is simply just this. But by the definition of what v is, my claim is this quantity, if I minimize this thing over choice of u, this thing is equal to v of x. So you know, that is the principle, what's called Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman principle, or Bellman principle, or principle of dynamic programming, which is essentially just saying that the shortest path from Santa Barbara to Boston, if it actually passes through Chicago, then this segment of this path from Chicago to Boston must also be the shortest path between these two. Otherwise, I could come here and take another path and reduce my cost. Similarly, this segment must be shortest between Santa Barbara and Chicago, because otherwise I could have reduced this cost by just changing this segment. So if you are sitting at a point X and you take a small step or apply a control and move to X plus delta XU, then you have this cost, the best cost from there on. You can minimize this for choice of U, and that by definition is the best thing you can do starting from X. So if I have many possibilities and from each of these possibilities I figured out the best way to steer my system, then I will steer it to the point, I'll choose a U such that this thing here is minimized and this cost is same as V of X. So one can take this minimum of U and then one can just do a Taylor series expansion here, V of X plus, and then one has the partial of V with respect to X times delta X of U. But delta X of U is nothing but just my equations of motion here, which is f of x u times delta t. Minimization over this thing here is equal to v of x. And that actually simply then gives you, there is no u here, so if I actually get this, that partial of v with respect to x times f of x u. So minimization over choice of u here, this thing is equal to zero. And that is what is a Bellman PDE. Remember, if I have in my system a terminal time, you know, the way I posed the problem, I said, go and steer your system as long or as short you want. Steer it to this set omega, which means that I want to fix certain coordinates of that thing, and I incur a cost phi of x of f. And I say I am going to solve that problem for each initial value of x, and I'll get this optimal cost starting from each v of x, and that optimal cost must satisfy this equation. Now, if there is a constraint that you can only steer your system for only certain amount of time t, then all that's happening is that your t is a state variable. We make t a state variable. State variable, which satisfies t dot equal to 1. So then if you look at this equations for the system, then you have x dot equal to f of x u t, and then you have t dot equal to 1. So if I look at this Bellman PDE, then this equation, then I get minimization over U. And then when we do this partial with respect to X, I can look at the state variables and this time that I have taken separately. So this is del V by del T times T dot, which is 1. And then you get del V by del X times F of X U. So if you say that you have actually found, so given this optimal control problem of steering this system to a terminal point and incurring a cost, if I solve it and get an optimal control, then and so if I get an optimal control, which is, say, U star T, and that generates a trajectory X star of T, then this along this optimal trajectory, this equation here is satisfied for all times. So that is the, so if I start with an initial point X and I apply this optimal control U of T, then I will incur a cost which I am writing as V of X. So that is my minimum cost starting from this initial value. And I can do it for all values of X. And this V, this return function here, satisfies this equation here. So that is what is HJB equation.
Different forms. You said that you, to get to the second form, you made T a state variable.
Yes.
So when would you use the first form and when would you use the second form?
You know, this is the most general one, but usually state variables have a meaning for your physical system, and time is separate. So I can actually take this and separate it out and write it like this here. So if I actually so V is a function of X and T, del T, plus this del V over del X times F of. Now, if I do not specify a terminal time, I say that you are allowed to steer the system as long as you want, then if there is no restriction on the terminal time, then the cost V of steering the system starting at certain point X does not depend on this T, because there is no restriction on this time. See, if there is a final restriction on the time that you have to steer this system to a terminal point in capital T, then if you have more time to go, so T minus T is the time to go. So you have to steer this system in only T minus T amount of time. Then this thing here, the best you can do if you have less time at your disposal, then your performance is going to be to degrade. So if V here was you are trying to minimize the cost, so V was the minimum cost, then this thing here in general would be then positive. But if there is infinite time, then this thing here goes to zero, and then the minimization becomes simply a minimization. I mean, assuming that there is no t here, so then I have f of So these are so-called infinite horizon problems that I have to steer the system and minimize this cost. But if the time is infinite time, then this thing here goes to zero, and I'm only left with this quantity. But for finite time problems, then you have just this thing here. But if you put everything into a state variable, then this quantity is equal to zero. So actually, I wanted to work through some examples, but I see I am. How much more time do I?
How much more time would you like for the examples? Half hour? Or if you need more than a half hour, I think we should continue next week.
I think I have time to read the.
Well, okay. We can do separately, but if you think a half hour is enough, then I think we can all take a deep breath and.
Okay, so actually one thing that is
so now in this term dvdt.
Yes.
That seems to. In the previous example that you showed us from Pontryagin's book,
yes,
you wanted to do a minimum time problem.
Yes.
And there you kind of incorporated the penalty on time, the cost on time, by having an x3 variable.
Yes.
This time with an x3.
Yes.
X3 dot was fixed.
Yes.
And so is that? In a certain sense, does that play the analogous role here as this dvdt?
Yes, because the x3 variable, if you actually will write down this equation, then this will be del v del x3. And x3 dot is 1, and then you have, the remaining part, which is del v del x f of.
But can you always simply make the time a state variable? Again, if I think of a quantum mechanical problem, I don't see how to do this so simply.
You know, time is, I mean, I can call t as a state variable and just call it t dot equal to 1. I mean, it doesn't change. I mean, I can, you know, if. I mean,
you're saying in a quantum mechanical problem, it would be a state which has somewhat a strange equation of motion.
Actually, it has nothing to do with quantum mechanics. I have a system of equations, and then there is this time, which if I call it as a state variable, then that is just evolving as one, and reaching somewhere at a terminal time is just fixing the value of that state variable at the terminal time. Actually, it's an innocuous statement. I mean, I'm not saying anything very deep here.
So how is this now related to the Pontryagin?
How is this related to the Pontryagin maximum? Yes. So exactly. So that is what I was coming to. So okay. So So that is your equation of motion. So minimum del Vx, this thing is equal to zero. So what I can do now is, so you choose a trajectory u star, you choose a control u star of t, and that generates a trajectory x star of t. So then what I can do is I can evaluate, so v of x is my optimal return function. So it means this is the best I will do starting from the state x. So it is a function of the state x, and I can actually look at its partial derivative v of x, and I can look at its partial derivative v of x. So this is again some function of x here, and I can evaluate this v of x at, I can evaluate this v of x at this trajectory x star of t. This plays the role of lambda of t. So we have this plays the role of lambda of t. And it's actually easy to see that. Now what I would like to do is, actually if I look at this equation here, let's see along the optimal trajectory what is happening. So then I have minimization over choice of u, and then if I look at what's happening along the optimal trajectory, then this is lambda of t. F of x star of t, u of t. But this is, if you recall, this is nothing but just the Hamiltonian of the system. Actually, this is x star of t, lambda of t, u. So So you see, if you are at this, if one is at this point here, x, and I have computed this v of x, then I have this partial of v with respect to x, then I have this thing, and my control that I'll apply starting from x, u star of x, is argmin of this quantity del v del x times f of x u. And then you have del v del x times f of x u star of x. This quantity is equal to zero. That's what's being said. So if you have this optimal return function, which is v of x, then at each point x, you take this thing and you minimize it with respect to the possible choices of u. That is gives you this optimal control u star of x. And when you plug that minimum in there, so this thing, that is equal to zero. So now, what relating back to the maximum principle, what is being claimed is that these adjoint variables lambda of t are the partials of this return function evaluated along this optimal trajectory. And then what you have is that your u star of t is actually arg min over choice of u of this quantity here, which is the Hamiltonian. So this is x star of t lambda of t u. So u star of t is actually the minimum over this. So that was the claim before, that I have this Hamiltonian function. This is the canonical way I define the Hamiltonian function. And the optimal control law actually minimizes this Hamiltonian function at each time. What's even further being said is that minimum, if I put in there x star of t, lambda of t, u of t, that quantity is equal to zero. U star of t. So it actually gives you, the only thing I need to show here is that if I have randomly decided that I am going to ascribe lambda of t as the partial of v with respect to x evaluated along this trajectory, let's see if actually it satisfies let's in the remaining time, let me just quickly justify that it actually satisfies the equation of motion that lambda does. So recall, if I define my Hamiltonian H as lambda prime f of x u, then you can ask, what does this Hamiltonian H, what does the equation for lambda satisfy? Then lambda dot is minus del H by del x. So if we actually come back here, if we actually come back here and see if that is the case, so I have this equation here, I can equal to zero. So I can actually differentiate that with respect to t. So this gives me. So we define lambda of t here as v of x evaluated at x star of t. Or lambda prime. So then if I differentiate it with respect to t, then that gives me, this gives me Vxx evaluated at x star of t times the differentiation of x star, which is f of x star u star. Now, the claim is that this thing here should look something like this thing here. Well, it does, because if I actually take this thing here and then just take the partial of that with respect to x, so I have v of x times f of x u of x, and I take this quantity here and take its partial with respect to x. So if I do a partial with respect to x, that gives me v x x, and then I have f of x u of x. And then I need a partial here, so which is v of x. Sorry, this is u star of x. And this thing here is equal to 0. So then if I have to take a partial here with respect to x, then I have v of x, and then I have f of x. Partial of f with respect to x times x, let's see. So that part is correct, and then I have to take the partial with respect to u. But when I take the partial with respect to u actually minimizes this cost function here. So when I actually take the partial with respect to u, that thing goes to 0. So that gives you this quantity equal to 0. So this thing here goes to 0. So the only so then I had this equation for lambda dot of t, and this I have v, this thing is equal to 0. So that gives you that lambda dot of t prime here is equal to minus del v del x times this f of x. Now del v del x here along this trajectory is being taken as lambda of t prime. So then if I take the transpose of both sides, I get lambda dot of t is equal to minus del f by del x. Times lambda, which is, you know, h is this, so minus del h by del x here is lambda prime del f by del x. So, and taking the transpose of that, you get, so one gets that lambda dot of t is equal to minus del h by del x. So actually this v, this optimal return function that one gets, v of x if you take this partial and evaluate it along this optimal trajectory, this is lambda prime of t, you have to state. And also, the value of v, this optimal return function, at the terminal point, v at this terminal point x of f is simply phi of x of f. So then you can see that lambda prime of capital T is then simply this del phi over del x. And this, these were exactly the equations for the co-state variable. So in this dynamic programming picture, you have again, you discover the maximum principle, except that your lambda of t, this co-state variables, are actually partials of this return function evaluated along the trajectory. So this is actually, again, another derivation of this maximum principle from this perspective of dynamic programming. I think it becomes more clear with an example, but I can pick it up later on if
do you have an example of what the return function would look like, or how that would differ from the cost function?
Yes.
So we should finish after this.
Okay.
And we'll continue. We can continue next week with some examples.
Okay. My schedule next week is a bit iffy, but we can discuss that. So, you know, a typical problem that arises in actually context of this pulse design in NMR is a problem like this, which I wanted to talk about. So U1 and U2 are your controls that lie in a square, so 0, 1. So this is U1 and U2. So it takes values in this unit square here. And your starting point here is R10, R20 equal to say 10. And you are interested in actually steering this system by choice of these controls U1 and U2 to a terminal state so that you maximize R2 of capital T. So maximize this quantity. So that is your cost. So somebody comes and gives you a total time t and asks you to find u1 and u2 as functions of time such that for this equation u. Now you can see that you know, if I want to go from R1 to R2, then this is the coupling between R1 and R2. So if I make this U1 and U2 equal to 1, then I am going to flow from R1 to R2 due to this cross coupling here. But at the same time, this diagonal terms are going to make me dissipate. So if I can write this as minus z and minus 1 and 1, then U1 and U2 are chosen to lie at this point here. Now, but that is not guaranteed to be optimal. You can do such a strategy and you can compute what is the value. So you can choose them and evaluate the value of R2 at this terminal time capital T. But if you solve this problem optimally, then one can show that this was the cost that you were interested in. Starting from any initial point, R1, R2, the largest value of R2 that one can build is equal to simply eta square times R1 square plus R2 square. So this will then take the form of an optimal return function, which says that if I am at R1, R2, if somebody specifies an initial value here, R1, R2, then the maximum value of R2 that I can build is this. So this is a form of my optimal return function. This says that that's the best cost, the minimum cost I will get starting from an initial value R1 and R2. For instance, if you start from R1 equal to 1 and R2 equal to 0, this value comes out to be eta, where eta has a specific form, which is 1 plus z square minus z, where z is this variable here. Now, Bellman equations actually will immediately give you this, so it's not very hard to see. Actually, we don't even have to wait. If you give me 10 minutes more, we can have a good example. Just give me 10, because he has seen a lot of so one way to actually do this thing is so here is my system, and I'll motivate the study of this system in a second. But here we can solve this these Bellman equations here. So if I write down these Bellman equations, I am trying to maximize my value into this coordinate here, which is R2. So then I have to choose, original problems are posed as minimization problem. This is a maximization problem. So one just has to change minimum to maximum. You have to maximize U1, U2, and then this del V del X takes the form of del V del R1, del V del R2, and then this value of FXU, this is the evolution equation for here. So this quantity here is equal to minus z u1 square minus z u2 square, and then I have minus u1 u2 and I have u1 u2 and times r1 r2. So the thing is that choose values. If you are looking at the system and you are at a position R1, R2, you want to choose U1 and U2 such that this quantity here is maximized and that maximum value is equal to 0. Now, of course, you don't know V. So you don't know these coefficients a priori, so you don't know the optimal return function, because that's the problem we want to solve for. We want to solve for the optimal return function. But so let's just call these numbers here as lambda 1 and lambda 2. And you can now see that one thing is that if I look at the system, if I start from a larger value of R1 or a larger value of R2, I can only do better in making this value of R2. So these things we don't know, but we know they are greater than and equal to 0. So they are actually strictly greater than 0. So then let's actually rewrite this system here. So if I rewrite this quantity here, so I have lambda 1, lambda 2, and then we have minus z u1 square, minus z u2 square, minus u1, u2, u1, u2, and then we have r1, r2. So this, let me just open this up. And I have lambda 1, u1 square, and then we have minus z lambda 2, u2 square, and then we have here minus u1, u2, and then lambda 1, r2, minus lambda 2, r1. Now, now I can actually rewrite this thing. Let me just quickly rewrite this thing. As U1, U2, and times here u1, u2, and what comes on the diagonal here is minus z lambda 1 r1 minus z lambda 2 r2, and in the off diagonal entry I get one gets lambda 1 R2 minus R1 lambda 2 divided by 2, and lambda 1 R2 minus lambda 2 R1 divided by 2. The point is this is your I have to maximize this over choice of u1 u2, and that maximum should be equal to 0. What's that?
You still don't know the lambdas.
I still don't know the lambdas. So I have this. I have to maximize this, and the maximum value should be equal to 0. Now you're right. I still don't know the lambdas. But one thing is that if I look at the diagonal, the sum of these two diagonal entries, that's negative. R1, R2 are positive quantities. Lambda 1, lambda 2 are positive quantities. This whole thing on the diagonal is negative. So the sum of these eigenvalues of this matrix is negative. Now if you So the sum of the eigenvalues is negative. So that means one of the eigenvalues is negative. The other eigenvalue better be 0, because if I'm going to maximize this quantity, then that maximum is going to correspond to the largest eigenvector, is going to correspond to the eigenvector corresponding to the largest eigenvalue. So that means that the determinant of this thing here should be equal to zero. So I have z square lambda 1 r1 lambda 2 r2 minus this quantity here, which is lambda 1 r2 minus r1 lambda 2 over 2 square. This thing should be equal to 0, so one of this eigenvalues should be equal to 0. And so that's condition number 1 star. And then this thing u1 u2 must be a zero eigenvector of this, which essentially just means that u1, so minus z lambda 1 r1 u1, and then this quantity here plus lambda 1 r2 minus r1 lambda 2 divided by 2 times u2, this thing should be equal to 0. So take this quantity here, which is a square, take it to the other side, take the square root and plug it back in this equation here, and that essentially gives you that u2r2 over u1r1 is equal to 1 plus z square minus.
So the unknown lambdas canceled out?
Well, the unknown lambdas never fail. So because, you know, if I take this, this thing is what is coming in here. So if I take lambda 1 r2 minus r1 lambda 2 divided by 2, and this thing is equal to square root of this thing, so it is z here, and then I take the square root of this quantity, which is lambda 1 r1 lambda 2 r2, and just plug in back here. So you take this thing and just plug in back there, then you actually just get this ratio.
So the lambdas, which we never knew, in the end, we don't even need to know them.
The lambdas that you did not know, in the end, you actually don't end up needing to know them. So those go away. So this actually just gives you this relation here. And that gives you a feedback control law. So which is saying that if you are at R2, R1, then the choice of U2 and U1 that you should choose should be such that this thing is equal. So then given this equation here, that gives you a way to choose U1, U2. And you can solve this problem for finite time too. So here I have assumed infinite time. So what has happened is that del v over del t term that I had went away. But in actual, you can. So let me see if I can even actually make it more clearer. So I have z square lambda 1 r2 and then